Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Donna Kavanaugh, and this is Humor Outcast Radio. Tonight, I have with me such a funny and talented writer. She's so sweet, too. She's one of my favorite people in the world, and I can't wait till one day where I can actually meet her face to face. Her name is Dorothy Rosby, and she's a syndicated humor columnist whose work appears in publications in 11 Western and Midwestern states, which I have to break in here and say that is quite a feat in today's world. Her column has been recognized by the South Dakota. It is. It is an amazing. Today, nowadays, with print, it is amazing. Your column has been recognized by the South Dakota Newspaper Association, the South Dakota Federation of Press Women, and the National Federation of Press Women. She is also the author of the humorous book about self-help, I Used to Think I Was Not That Bad, and Then I Got to Know Me Better. And last year, this year, HO Press, we were so proud to release her latest book, I Didn't Know You Could Make Birthday Cake from Scratch, Parenting Blunders from Cradle to Empty Nest. So let's welcome Dorothy Rosby. I'm so glad you're on the show again.
Thanks for having me.
Well, my pleasure. I love to check in with you. And that is very true. In today's world, when everybody is clamoring to or trying to get into print, to still have these credentials that you are syndicated throughout in the Midwest, upper Midwest, you're South Dakota, so you reach a wide variety of people. What do you think the secret to your success with this is?
Well, do you know, I think what it really is I have a really kind of a niche, and that is small town humor. I think my humor might appeal to other people as well, but I'm from a small town, really small, 300-some people. So when I decided to try to market, and I kept hearing about how, you know, big newspapers were cutting and disappearing and cutting staff and columnists were disappearing, at that same time I was hearing that small community newspapers were actually the only segment of the newspaper market that was doing well. So I thought, geez, I'm a small town writer. So I kind of focused on them, and that's what worked for me to get those small town papers. So, you know, I don't have, you know, some of my friends in the business are in one paper, but their paper has more readers than all of mine combined. But I, you know, I do have
but
a paper.
I think it's a difference, but I think you're comparing apples to oranges, because I think while somebody's circulation might be bigger, your geography is a lot bigger. So you might
more
be
cows than people
known over. Yeah. But still, your work gets out into a variety of different areas. Even though it's small community papers, they go into a variety of different areas. And sometimes that's the better way to go. Or it's the way to go, not better, but, you know, like it's got a funny reach that way. You get more well-known.
Yeah. Well, I love it, and I love my editors, and they are very loyal. I have had some of them since I started writing my column 20 years ago, and
really?
Some of the same editors, and I hear from readers in those small towns, and so it is really fun for me. I appreciate it a lot. I'm very grateful.
It. You know, like those Hallmark movies where somebody leaves their, you know, city or metropolitan suburb, you know, that has a big city, and they go off and they take over a small town paper. Like, that's my dream.
Yeah. Well, I could probably find some for you. Yeah.
Find something for me.
I actually,
my God, how hard is it to find something in South Dakota?
Yeah. I worked at a small town paper when I was in high school. I had a journalism degree, and I had to do an internship, and I did one at a television station in Sioux Falls, which is a bigger town in South Dakota. But then I went back to my hometown and worked at the small town newspaper there for a whole summer, and it was so fun. It really was. I mean, it was kind of odd interviewing these people that I grew up with, and, you know, it's a whole different world, the small town newspaper world.
Newspaper, and it's more than, it's not like the hardcore press where you have, and not that it's not stressful, I don't mean to demean it in any way, but they don't have to deal with like the so many of the crime issues or, you know, just, there's just so much hairy things when you get into like a city environment that you can still actually run a paper and appreciate who your constituency is and that kind of thing. And it's, and they're community building those papers. They're not community destroying, which I think is, I always thought they were so cool.
Yeah, they are. I recall me when I was in college, the how fun it was to get the hometown paper, and they have this section, and they still have this section that has the neighbor news. So it's the Joneses were visiting the Smiths, and Dorothy came home to visit her parents over the weekend, and that sort of, that is kind of fun. Yeah, my journalism professor back at Augustana College in Sioux Falls always said, you know, make sure you get people's names right in the paper. It's probably, you know, in their obituary, it's probably the only time they'll be in the paper. Well, not when you're in a small town, because your name's in the paper all the time when you're from a small town. So it's kind of fun. Yeah. You're a celebrity.
You are, yeah, and I could see that, and how that would be fun too, because, and no matter, like, even with your books, because your books are go international, so you're able to bring a piece, a slice of that life, your hometown life, to people who have no idea. Like, we've joked about this before. I'm in, you know, the suburbs of Philly. I grew up in New York and northern New Jersey, which is New York City suburbs. And so it's, to me, it's like so refreshing to hear you talk about it, because you always have this sense of community, people you've cared about, who've cared about you forever. So it's like, I don't know, and it's such a time when everybody is so stressed and sort of on the cold side, you have this warmth in your community, which is really a nice thing to, it's sort of like nirvana.
Yeah, they would probably laugh to hear you say that, but you know, I think it is really special. In fact, next Sunday, this coming Sunday, I'm going to go up to my hometown of Buffalo, South Dakota, which is about 300 people, maybe 400 people live there, and I'm going to be presenting to the Buffalo Book Club. And so you might think, does a town that small have a book club? Well, they do. And so I asked them, you know, how many people do you expect? And do you know what they said? Take a guess.
300? 300?
No. 30. 30 every, people come.
I know,
to a
we're
book
like Mayberry
club.
And everybody would come. No.
Yeah.
How many?
Yeah, well, no, now I'm disappointed. No. No,
no,
they get,
I'm
they'll,
sorry.
They'll probably have you're... like... I was shocked. Well, actually, when I said, that's amazing, she said, well, I'm not sure.
Wait, how many
so
I missed? How many?
Well, she said like 30. 30 people come to this
book
club.
That's awesome. You can't get 30. That's a lot of people.
I thought so too. I'm just amazed. So, but I, you know, I commented on that, and she said, well, I'm not sure if it's so much a book club that enjoys a little wine or a wine club that enjoys a book. So
and there you have it. Wine is a universal language.
Have
we have proven that point.
Yeah,
do
and
you
so
enjoy,
that might make the book more interesting.
Is it hard going to, like, your hometown and reading what you wrote? Like, do you ever sit there and say, gee, I hope these people don't think differently of me? Or, I mean, especially in your, you know, because you're very self-deprecating in your humor. You make fun of yourself a lot, which is very funny how you do it. And without really beating yourself down, people get that message that it's just being self-deprecating and you're just joking about it. But do you ever think that anybody from Buffalo, do they sit there and they judge you differently, or do you think they just enjoy it, or do you ever worry about anything like that?
You know, I really
and if you haven't, don't start.
It.
I didn't mean to put that in your
brain. No.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
You know
bad
what?
Question.
No, no, no. I really haven't. It's kind of funny because what's happened over the last few years is I have, because of the book, I have been mm-hmm. invited to speak at different parties up in my hometown, like one of the, an oil company that employs quite a lot of people in that area. They have a big Christmas party and they invited me, and then another construction company. And so they have these Christmas parties and then, you know, different events like that I've been invited to speak. And the first time I went, was some of my classmates were there, and I was a little uncomfortable because of that. The second time was worse, though, because my brother actually works for that company. So that
wow.
was really different. I was kind of uncomfortable about that, but in the end, it seemed like they all really, it went really well. You know, it went really well, and my brother's still speaking to me. And so, you know.
Phew.
It went good. Yeah, but it was different going back there. I do a lot of speaking here, but to go back to my hometown was different. But see, now that I've done it a few times, I've kind of got it, and I've got it down, and they accept
and you relax
the way
I do it. Yeah. And
yeah,
it is
well,
for the first
relaxed.
Time when your worlds sort of collide, like even though you don't live in Buffalo anymore and you have a career and all this other stuff, you've been married a long time, you're a mom, all that kind of thing. But it's still and so you have that separate world from your old Buffalo world. And then to
right.
then they get a glimpse into your world now, and it's got a public image to it. So it's weird when those worlds collide. I know, like, even when I have a book signing and friends that I'm such good friends with, but they're not in the writing world, and they say, oh, I'm coming to your book presentation, I get a little nervous. Like, oh,
yeah, yeah,
this is
a
side of me they don't normally
yeah.
say, you know?
Yeah. And they meet people from your other world, and yeah, it is. It's very different.
Yeah,
but
the worlds collide. Sometimes it's a wonderful thing, and it usually is a wonderful thing. But other times, and it's more a projection. Oh my God, I get a little more nervous about it.
yeah.
But the stories in your book are so funny that I think it just disarms everybody. Like even if they're, you know, they come in thinking, oh, what's he going to talk about, or you know, And then when you read from your books, it's, like I said, your self-deprecating humor, and it's so down to earth. And really everything in your stories, even when you're cracking jokes, a lot of love comes through for your family, for your friends, for your son. So much comes through. So I think that paves the way for a lot of people. Do you find that hard to write? Or because some humorists, when they take the family route, they're a little hard-hitting on their loved ones. But you're not
yeah.
that way at all.
Yeah, I am actually much more comfortable poking fun at myself than anybody else. In any kind of writing I do, way easier for me to make fun of myself. Plus, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, you know. There's always something that I can make fun of myself. But truly, I really am more comfortable with it. I don't know why that is, but I'm not good at, you know, even poking fun at politicians or, you know, and that's like shooting fish in a barrel too. But I'm not comfortable with it. It's
okay.
It's my comfort zone to use me. Yeah. Now, every once in a while, I do go the other direction, but not very often. I can think of about, I don't know, 3 or 4 times in my 20 years as a columnist where I've gotten nasty letters from people because they thought I stepped on toes. In thinking about it, I don't think I was really that hard on anybody, but you know, people take offense easily.
Very
sometimes.
Easily now. And I
yeah,
don't think they
yeah, yeah.
expect it from you. Because
yeah,
even
maybe,
when you speak, you're
it.
A very calm speaker. And you have that great, and you always yeah, laugh at me when I say this, but you have this, and I'm sure in Buffalo it's not an accent, but to everybody else
right,
it's an
right.
accent.
yeah.
But you have that Midwestern accent that just makes you seem, you could be a horrible person, but just because you have that accent, everyone thinks, oh, she's so nice.
We have
but
a reputation
for that. But she's not a horrible person.
That.
She really is genuinely nice.
we have
so
this,
we'll put that
we have
out
a reputation.
There.
Yeah, for being really, we do. We, it's like we are really nice people for the most part around here. But we, you know, it's kind of like we always wave at everybody on the highway. You know, when you're in a little town, you always wave.
And you don't flip them off. You really wave like you do it here.
You really wave.
And just, they flip you back. Oh
yeah,
because they're like, what do they want?
Yeah, you know, we even have, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, the small town wave. Have you ever heard of the small town wave?
No.
Well, it's because you're driving along and you have both hands on the wheel and you haven't seen another car all day, which is common, and all along comes another car and you're really excited because there's another car, so you're going to wave, but you keep both hands on the wheel and you just lift one finger. And I mean, it's not the wrong finger either. It's just pick up your pointer finger, wave,
wait,
and they do the
go,
same, and you
go,
smile.
And that's small town wave. I'm going to try that. I'm going to try this tomorrow on the road as I'm bucking traffic on the Schuylkill Expressway, which is a horrendous expressway in Philadelphia. I'm going to try it, and I guarantee you somebody's going to yell at me.
I'm gonna guess that they're going to misunderstand you and think you use a different finger.
I think they are. But I'm going to get, you know, for the sake of journalism, I'm with you. I was a reporter. I'm going to try this out.
Give it a whirl.
Do you really drive
on
a road and don't see anybody all day? For real?
Not where I live right now, but up where I grew up, you can spend a lot of time not seeing anybody or seeing very few people. It's a little town, and it's surrounded by giant ranches, and, you know, you can drive along and not see many. You can see a lot more cows than people up there.
Yeah. And I heard cows are very friendly, too.
Yeah, for the most part, yep.
For the most part. So, with the latest book you did, I Didn't Know You Could Make Birthday Cake from Scratch, I think the title pretty much says it all. I think despite your hometown and your Midwestern thing, you're probably not the most domestic diva out there. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Oh, no. You're absolutely right. I don't think I ever did bake a real birthday cake. We bought them, but we weren't big into cake. We were more likely to put a candle in whatever else was being served. So, no, my poor child did not grow up with homemade baked goods at all. But
and
you know,
he has
not suffered. No, right. He has, he had no cavities because he never got any baked goods. There's a bright side to it. I take it back, though. What we did eat a lot of was those fundraising cookie dough things, you have those out there where you buy these tubs of cookie dough to help raise money for every group. They're, you know, the orchestra and the band. And do you have that? We did do a lot of that baking. So that was as close as we got.
Well, I'm all for that. I'm for the cookie tubs where you just scoop out. Let me tell you this. Christmas time, my sisters, my sister-in-laws, they are all tremendous bakers. They make the best cookies ever. I do never, ever bake because it is just it's just a source of ridicule. Because I just suck at it, to be honest with you. So I can identify with your plight here. I can truly identify. So when those fundraising things came with the tubs of the cookies or the cutting the cookies or whatever, the instant cookies that you could just throw in the oven, I just thought it was like a miracle. I embraced it wholeheartedly.
Well, and don't try this at home. And this is one of my bad mom confessions here, that we really liked that cookie dough better raw. Which, don't do that. Don't do it. If you say I will deny it, because you shouldn't do that. It's bad. It's dangerous.
I don't know. I think when they sell it that way, I know they have the warnings on it, but isn't like pasteurized or something like that?
Well, that's what was my I read that and thought, what the hey? I'm just not encouraging anybody else to do what I did because I really love cookie dough. I really love it.
Yeah, me too. I I do too. Good. And they started to sell it at like fairs and stuff, frozen cookie dough, frozen raw cookie dough. So if they, I think it's like the same stuff. Like, but I wouldn't, okay, and we'll put a caveat out here. If you're baking the cookies yourself and you're putting the raw eggs in, don't eat the cookie dough. Because
do
you don't know
it. Yeah.
Don't do it. You know, if you go to a state fair and they're selling frozen cookie dough, I'm assuming it's okay. And same with the toast.
They know what they're doing, right?
I'm going with it.
And then they'll put it on a stick. No.
So
it's a pork chop
like,
on the stick. And,
In the book, you have so many fun stories about raising your son, who is now grown and he's serving in the armed forces, correct?
Right. He's in Kuwait right now. He's in the Army.
He's in Kuwait. He's in the Army.
Seven or eight more months. A long time.
I know. I know this has been hard for you. I always feel bad when, especially when he was shipped out, and I know that was very difficult. It's so funny, this book and the stories you have with him and his growing up years, from daycare to and you cover so many different things, helicopter moms at camp. Like the birthday cake. So what is your favorite story in the book, and why is that your favorite story?
You know, I don't know. It'd be hard to pick a favorite, but there's one that kind of came to me in the last few days because school started, and that is the one about story problems, how I'm really no good at math and how I, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I did a whole thing about story problems and how, you know, and I'm sure you're the same way, as a liberal arts person, those story problems in math, you know what I mean? You know, the ones, you know, Sarah washes dishes three nights a week and washes clothes one, you know, those story problems.
Right.
They take something that we liberal arts people like a lot, stories, and make them into something we don't like at all, which is math problems. And I'm
they pervert
greatly
them.
Offended them. They do. It's like, what are you doing? So I wrote about story problems in there. It was kind of fun. I converted some of those story problems into
that is a great chapter. That is a great chapter. That was the creativity in it, and I know with all humor there's exaggeration, but I just think that it's based in fact. And the name of the chapter is How Long Will It Take Dorothy to Do Right to Do 22 Math Problems?
To do 22 math problems, yeah. So here, I'll read you a problem. This is one I converted.
Yeah.
This is a taking a math problem and changing it to a liberal arts person's perspective. So David can walk 12 blocks in 5 minutes. If each block is 50 feet long, how many feet will David walk during the 30 minutes he walks his dog? That's a genuine math problem. I saw it in a math book. So I think a math person would say 3,600 feet or something like that. I say that depends. Does the dog have to pee? Because I'm a liberal arts person, so that's how we see the world. So, I have some of those.
You have to bring in the whole ambiance. You have to bring in the surroundings, the conditions, the situations. Was it raining? Was it sunny? You have to look at everything. You just can't look at the math end of it.
Well, yes, and so they leave all that out, and the poor little liberal arts-minded student is sitting there thinking, well, that depends on a lot of factors, yes. So that's probably one of my favorites, but at least at this moment, because school was starting, you know, and school's just getting underway, and I'm thinking back to how I really do not miss any of that as a mom.
No, I
you know,
agree.
I'm glad to be done with it, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but, you know, I'm like, I mean, I see, even like, I go to Bed Bath & Beyond and they're buying college stuff, and I'm like, oh, thank God, I don't have to do that anymore. I'm just thrilled,
you know. God bless mothers. They are they are amazing. You know, once you've been one, you see them and you see this whole new thing, you know, she looks calm, she's, you know, skipping along, and you look at her and you know that all the spit up that she's dealt with and the diapers and the late nights and the sick babies, and
it's
you just appreciate.
The facade.
Yeah, it's just, you know, there's spit up on that collar.
There you go. I know, and you just, you're patient, like, you just panic, and then you wait, I don't have to do that anymore. I'm good.
I'm good.
I have to tell you, because we were revisiting some of these stories, and we only have, like, a couple minutes left, so, but I'm gonna share that story on Humor Outcast this week, because it just, when I was going through the book again, and I'd gone through the book so much when we were doing the book, but I was laughing out loud again at the stories. And I said, oh, you know what, I'm going to excerpt this book again because it's just too funny. I just enjoy it so much. Oh, absolutely. So anyway, everybody, the name of the book is I Didn't Know You Can Make Birthday Cake from Scratch, Parenting Blunders from Cradle to Empty Nest, and it is such a funny book, and you need a lift, you just need to read this book. Dorothy Roseby, my favorite, you and Mary Farr, you're my favorite Midwesterners, and you're just so talented, we did meet at Irma Bombeck 2 years ago.
Right.
And that's right, and it was, but I would love to be able to sit and visit because I just love your humor, and you're just such a warm person. So everyone, check out the book. We are so proud that we launched it, and this show will be up on Friday, and we'll be talking with Dorothy again.
Thank you
so much for doing the show. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
And that's it for tonight, and we'll talk to you all next week. Thanks so much. Good night.
Good night.